The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Seth Liebson Show. This is not Seth. This is John Gabriel. I write every other week for the Arizona Republic, and I'm also the editor at Ricochet.com, and I'm very happy to welcome on one of my fellow editors at Ricochet.com, Bethany Mandel. How are you doing, Bethany?
Hey, I'm well. Thank you so much. I have a two-year-old with a 103 fever on my lap.
Oh, my goodness. Whew, okay. We will keep that in mind. Wanted to have you on because you've been writing about this, drawing public attention to it, and the media is just falling asleep on the story. We had an attack on a rabbi's house and some people gathered for Hanukkah. A guy with a machete ran in. A few weeks ago, there was a shooting of a kosher market in Jersey City. What the heck is going on in and around New York right now?
Yeah, I mean, the terrifying thing is that these are not the only incidents. Literally every single day of Hanukkah, there was attack in Brooklyn. There was a woman walking with her child who was hit in the head. People have been chased on the subway, screaming anti-Semitic epithets. There has been something happening every single day. And there's a lot of reasons why this is going on. I think a lot of it is a resurgence of anti-Semitism in the Black community that we haven't really dealt with. And instead of dealing with it, especially folks on the progressive left have decided to sort of cozy up to the worst offenders, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and yada, yada. And the government officials in New York and New York City were meeting with these folks the day after Muncie. I mean, this is par for the course from them, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really tragic to see, especially with the significant crime drop that's occurred in New York City over the past 20, 30 years, and just to see this kind of rampant violence ramp back up, and especially targeting Jewish Americans, you know, which are, you know, so many Jewish Americans live in and around New York City, and just to see this rot that has been allowed to fester for so long. I think many of us, like around my age, can remember how Al Sharpton got famous, making up
yes.
allegations and trying to rile people up against the Jewish community there.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is that unlike sort of any other denomination outside of like Muslims and Sikhs, the Jewish population is so incredibly identifiable in Brooklyn. And another part of this sort of puzzle is that the media in the New York area, especially sort of local progressive media like Gothamist, have made a game out of villainizing Jews in Brooklyn for the last 10 years.
Wow.
All of their coverage has been really just astoundingly bigoted, and a lot of people within that community have been sending up warning signals for the last 10 years saying, you know, this is going to lead to violence. This is going to lead to problems, and people in the left wing media did not care.
Now, why do you think that is in the media in New York City? You know, we're way out here in Phoenix, so I don't follow the Gothamist or the daily papers over there. But are they doing it under the guise of gentrification or anti-Zionism, which they always fall back to? What has been the reason they've been subjecting these people to so much criticism?
So a lot of the negative press attention on the Gothamist side, which is something I have followed very closely because it personally infuriated me, is sort of the perception of Orthodox Jews that they're backwards and that they are practicing this ancient, silly sort of sky, man in the sky religion that has no place in the modern world. And so a lot of their coverage has mocked sort of that sort of religious rituals. And there's also sort of the usual sort of anti-Semitic tropes about, you know, landlords and yada yada. And there are issues with slumlord landlords, but there are slumlord landlords of all stripes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And just to target one ethnicity is, especially with the history of anti-Semitism, is really appalling. You mentioned just it's easier to pick them out of a crowd, too. A lot of these victims we're talking about are Orthodox Jewish people who definitely wear a different manner of dress. I have, you know, if people understood, if you're a local atheistic journalist knew my religious beliefs, they would think I was a crazy sky god worshiping whatever as well.
Right, exactly.
But I fit in with everyone else. You know, I don't have I don't wear different clothes or anything like that. So when you can just pick people out in public and attack them, that makes it all the more disturbing.
Yeah, and the disturbing thing, I think, there's a lot of disturbing aspects to this latest violence. One of the really disturbing things is when you see videos of these attacks, a lot of them are captured by sort of store cameras or Ring videos, whatever, is that when they happen in public, no one steps in.
Wow.
No one, I can understand not stepping in when the attack is in motion, but then you sort of see the video of, it's usually a man laying on the ground after he's just been violently assaulted, and no one runs over to him like, oh my God, are you okay? People just sort of stand there and stare and look around.
Man.
And that to me is, it's endemic of a lot of apathy towards Orthodox Jews in those neighborhoods, and it's been a real problem since Al Sharpton sort of started pogroms, and this is another set of pogroms.
Exactly. And why do you think the media in general, and we're talking mainstream media from the New York Times, CNN, whomever, just hasn't really wanted to focus on this? Instead, there'll be a pro forma statement of, well, it's Trump's fault, he's anti-Semitic.
Yes.
And but when it's obviously coming from the left or something completely apolitical, why do you think they're so hesitant to talk about it? They're so concerned about being woke and they just brush this under the rug.
So there's a few things. One of them is they don't care about violence against the weird looking Jews.
Yeah.
The reason why the Tree of Life shooting in Pittsburgh got so much publicity was because it was the perfect story for them. They could blame it. It was a white nationalist. They could twist it to blame it on Trump, even though the shooter himself actually complained that Trump surrounded himself with too many Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And the victims were more sympathetic in their eyes. They could show their pictures. One of the sort of creepy things about the wake of Jersey City was that there was no pictures shown of the victim, the Jewish victims. There was plenty of coverage of the heroic policemen and visual imagery of them. But I remember seeing one blurry picture of the shop owner, the woman who was killed, and no real profiles of her family or her community. She was just sort of a faceless blob that had no unique identity. One of the really powerful things that I saw in the wake of the attack in Muncie in New York this past weekend, one of my friends was actually at a Hanukkah party in the house next door, and she was there with her five children, and they had a fun time, and they walked home, and they saw all of the emergency personnel passing and them going in the other direction as they were walking home, and they had left their phones at home because it was the Jewish Sabbath, and they hadn't turned their phones on. So they had no idea what was happening. And they got back to their friend's house, and everyone turned their phones on and realized what had happened literally hundreds of yards away from where they were. And she sort of stopped and looked at her children and thought, I have five of you. What would I have done?
Right.
Who would I have grabbed? How would we have run out of the door? These are all five children who are deeply loved. It doesn't make a difference that I have five. I deeply love all five. And it's so hard. I mean, and I sort of viscerally got me as a mother of four children who are all quite young, and hers are as well. It takes 20 minutes to get out the door.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where we're going, it takes 20 minutes to get out the door. what would we do if something like this happened? And I had to convey to my four very young children in an instant, you need to come with me now. This is a non-negotiable situation. And she sort of had that that reflection on Facebook about, you know, my God, what would I have done? And that voice is so humanizing and so absent in the coverage of these events, because people see the Orthodox Jews as sort of mindless.
Right. And just casting them as the other, you know, and just to see people who are progressive in their politics singling out certain people as the other is troubling. I know you are tending to a sick child, which is wonderful. Is there any way you could stay with us through the break?
Yeah.
Okay,
no
fantastic.
Problem.
We'll be back with Bethany Mandel talking about the rash of anti-Semitic activity in New York and also what all of us, Jewish or non-Jewish, can do to help out in the situation. You are listening to John Gabriel filling in for Seth Liebson here on 960 The Patriot. Be back with you in a couple minutes. That is The Outfield. I know that song. You're back with John Gabriel. I'm interviewing Bethany Mandel. She is a fellow editor at Ricochet.com, which you all should join. Just got a note from our CEO saying sell membership. So check it out. Go to Ricochet.com. But we're talking about concerns about the anti-Semitic attacks going on, especially in and around New York City. You had a fantastic article that you wrote at Ricochet on, and it was titled, In Light of Anti-Semitic Attacks, What Can We Do to Help? And what would you recommend? Because I'm sitting here on the other side of the country, and I wouldn't even know where to begin, how to help and let these important members of our community make sure they feel welcome and safe and secure.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there are feelings of sort of fear and nervousness for Jews across the country, and not just in New York, because these incidents are not isolated to the New York area, although they have mostly been there. One of the nice things that I have noticed is just people sharing the story and expressing horror. A lot of the time, you know, when you log onto Facebook and it says 12 people have posted this article,
right?
And I click to see the 12 people, and it's only ever Jews.
Wow.
And it's nice when it's not mm-hmm. a Jew. And I notice it, and I sort of take note, like, oh, wow, someone else cares enough to post this and to express horror about this. But some of the things that I sort of mentioned in my piece was if you don't live in the area, donations are greatly appreciated and pretty needed. One of the things on my to-do list is to write a piece about the financial costs of all of these security enhancements that synagogues and schools and Jewish community centers and Hillels have had to make. Just because these things have been happening in New York doesn't mean that this financial crunch hasn't hit Jewish institutions across the country. One of my friends is a director at a Hillel in the New York, New Jersey area, and he told me that they, in response to the Pittsburgh shooting, decided to install some really serious security protections in the Hillel building, which is sort of the Jewish community center on a college campus, and it cost them $100,000.
Wow.
And that was just the building enhancements, but then also that year, they decided to pay off-duty police officers to patrol at services. So that was another $100,000. So he said in that year, he had close to $250,000 that he didn't budget in his budget just for security. And these sorts of costs are hitting Jewish institutions across the country. I anecdotally, and I haven't been able to verify it, there was a school that just closed down in the Carolinas. And I've heard anecdotally, and I'm trying to get confirmation, that a lot of the final straw for them financially was the fact that they felt like they had to enhance their security protections, and they couldn't financially afford to do so. And so instead of having a school open that was susceptible to an attack, they decided the best thing to do would be to close their doors.
Wow.
And it sounds extreme, but when one of the things that people don't talk about in Jersey City, because the story was very inconvenient for a number of reasons, and so people stopped talking about it very quickly, was that the original target appears to have been a school next door. It wasn't the supermarket. They were armed with an incredible amount of ammunition, and there were 50 school children three doors away. And the mayor of Jersey City sort of announced, stated on Twitter that if you look at the surveillance videos from that day, the shooters initially went to that door, and they found that they couldn't get in, and so they decided to change their plan of attack and go into the supermarket instead. And that security protection at the door, that steel barred door that you had to be buzzed in, was what saved 50 children from certain slaughter.
Right.
And those security protections are incredibly important for schools, and it doesn't matter where you are. I mean, a lot of these attacks have been happening in Brooklyn. I don't think anyone necessarily thought that they were going to happen in Jersey City until the day that they happened, but the Jersey City school was prepared, and so they had that security protection in place, thank God.
Yeah.
So all of these security protections cost a great deal of money, and I'm on the listservs of a lot of different synagogues in my area and sort of where we used to live as well, and we've received emails saying, like, if you have extra money, please consider donating to our specially designated security fund, because this has been financially really challenging for us. So those would be sort of my two number one suggestions, to just sort of raise awareness among your social circles. And if you're able to, even if it's just $5, again, that sends such a message to that Jewish community that someone cares, and they're not, and the only people that care are not just Jews.
Right. And it's one of those things, too, like something I really appreciated. Boris Johnson had a huge victory in the UK a few weeks ago, and he gave a Hanukkah message, which was wonderful. And he says, just so you know, you are a vital part of our nation, and all decent people in this nation support you. So
especially when you consider what the alternative would have been, that I'm sure that was a very nice message for the Jewish community in England, Jersey.
Precisely. Yeah, because they've been embattled. And I think maybe, like you say, maybe we've just rested on our laurels too much. You see anti-Semitic attacks going on throughout Europe, now in the UK, and you're like, well, America's different, we're tolerant, you know, the various cultures have fully integrated here. But no, it's just, you know, every generation, this ugly hatred keeps crawling back in a different form, and it's really disturbing. So, yeah, if all of us, just decent people of any belief or no belief at all, just takes a minute and say, hey, you're welcome here, and we got your back. That sends a very powerful message.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
Yeah. Okay, well, Bethany, I thank you so much for being on. Why don't you tell us why people should visit Ricochet.com?
Why should you visit Ricochet.com? So it's actually interesting. We have sort of this bifurcated business model that has something for everyone. You can make friends and post articles or insights on our site, and you can engage in really wonderful conversations with our member base that are always civil and always kind. And if you're not, you're booted off the site. and after many warnings. But the other wonderful thing is we have a whole series of podcasts on our network, including one with you and one with me, but separate. So maybe we should have one. Maybe we should have a crossover event every now
and then. We need to do that. Let's do that in the new year. Bethany, thanks so much for being on. Hanukkah isn't quite wrapped up here because it's not quite nighttime out in Phoenix, but I hope you had a wonderful Hanukkah. Have a wonderful new year coming up. Say hi to Seth for me, and we'll talk to you more in the new year. Thanks for being on.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You bet. And we will be back after the news break here on 960 The Patriot. Once again, I'm John Gabriel, filling in for the great Seth Liebson. Is taking a little well-deserved time off, and we'll be back talking to you in a few minutes. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Welcome back to 960 The Patriot, and we're very happy to have on John Dabrowski from Grand Canyon Planning. How are you doing, John?
Good, John. How's it going?
Doing fantastic here.
Wonderful.
Why don't you tell us about something that you had mentioned that I had heard about is there's been changes to the SECURE Act. Can you tell us about what's going on with that and how it could affect us?
Right. And this is something, John, that's been discussed in Washington for some time now regarding retirement accounts. You know, the studies have shown that Americans, unfortunately, have not been diligent enough when it comes to saving for retirement. So there's a couple of things in this new SECURE Act that was passed here just recently, which adversely affects some, but there's some positives to it as well. But I did want to cover the required minimum distributions. This is something that a lot of people have challenges with. And what I mean by that is, for all of our working career, we may contribute to retirement accounts. If you're working for a company, it might be a 401k that you're contributing to, and that company may also match some of the contribution that you make to that retirement account, which is great if they do. It's free money to you. And all of the money that you put into the 401k traditionally is something that you deduct from your income, reducing your taxable income for the year that you make the contribution. So it's a benefit for you, right? You're deferring the tax on that money. But one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is at some point in the future, you're going to have to take that money out.
Right.
And pay the tax on it, as well as any growth that the account would have had. So if you've invested wisely over the last 20, 30, 40 years, there was an all-important age of 70 and a half, which you would have to begin taking withdrawals from those accounts, including that withdrawal into your income and paying taxes on that withdrawal each year that you take it. And it's a mandatory distribution, John, and a lot of people weren't aware of that, or they just didn't realize that that's something that would need to be done at some point. And if you neglected to take the distribution, there was a large penalty on the amount that you didn't take. So recently, the SECURE Act was passed, and the benefit here is they're allowing individuals now in retirement accounts to defer taking mandatory distributions now to the age of 72. So you're getting an extra year and a half to be able to defer that income. Now, also, if you are working in the past, once you hit that age of 70 and a half for IRAs, you were unable to continue to contribute to that retirement account. But they've also increased the age for contributions up to the age of 72 as well. So this is a benefit. It gives folks who do not want to withdraw from those retirement accounts the opportunity to allow that to continue until the age of 72.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. It looks like with the right planning, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, you might want to visit. If any of this is a little daunting for you, you can get a little more information there. But could really be of benefit to all of us as we grow older and look towards retirement. One other thing I wanted to touch on is just the stock market performance. It was a very turbulent time for many years, but boy, lately it seems to just be going up and up.
Yeah, we saw the S&P 500 over the last 5 weeks have a positive week for the last five straight weeks consecutively, which is fantastic. And we saw about almost a 28% increase in the S&P. Year to date. Now, of course, we still have a day tomorrow for trading.
Right.
Anything can happen. The market was down a little bit today, but some profit taking.
Yeah.
I would just encourage those out there that if you're a person who, you have made a substantial amount of money in the market this year and you wanted to take some of those profits, tomorrow is the last day that you'll be able to do that. If you hold past the end of the year and place a trade in next year, 2020, then any of the sales that you would have, whether they're gains or losses, would be attributed to the year that you actually make that sale. So make sure that if you're trying to do any last-minute tax planning, that you make those decisions before the end of the year. And, of course, whenever you're trying to do anything tax-related, you should always speak with your tax advisor to make sure you're getting proper advice and understand all of the potential liability that you might have when it comes to taxes. So, but yeah, the markets have done really well. John, for those out there who have 401ks or those out there who have IRAs or just general investments in the market, oftentimes I like to say that it's not, timing the market, it's time in the market that ultimately can, have the benefit for you over a long period of time to help you benefit and securing your retirement.
Exactly. Yeah, just look at his long haul, not a quick, easy fix. This isn't
we're not
talking about Vegas here. We're talking about long-term planning. John Dabrowski, thanks so much for being on with Grand Canyon Planning Associates, GCPA. Check them out. They're grandcanyonplanning.com.
And let me just give you my securities and advisory services offered through Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC, and not affiliated. Thanks, John, so much.
Thank you, John. Have a great new year.
You as well. Bye-bye.
We'll be back in a few minutes here on 960 The Patriot. Welcome back to 960 The Patriot. This is the Seth Leibson Show, guest hosted today by John Gabriel. I write every other weekend for the Arizona Republic, giving my opinion and viewpoints over there. I'm also the editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, fantastic website. And I was just kind of looking through the news of the day. Obviously, with the holidays, we're in kind of a slower period, not as much news going on. And but we do have some great guests coming up next hour. We have Cam Edwards, who's from Bearing Arms. He's the editor-in-chief there. He's going to talk about the need for the Second Amendment and why it's important. And in the last hour at 5 p.m. local time, we're going to have Stephen Cruiser, great comedian, great commentator, writes for PJ Media. You can find his stuff all over the place. So we're looking forward to talk to them. One story that piqued my interest that I thought was very interesting. We hear so much doom and gloom, especially about the environment. We have the How Dare You Girl. She's always popular for copy, named the Person of the Year for 2019. And we're always hearing how we only have 12 years left. I mean, 10 years. I mean, 8 years. And then there are many articles lately that I've seen saying we actually might be out of time already. So all this fear mongering, it's kind of interesting to look back. My entire life, I've had these predictions going on, and I think most of the listeners have as well. I remember I had a first grade teacher. We lived in Chicago until I was about six. We moved out to Phoenix, and she showed us a map showing where the new man-made, man-caused ice age was going to cover our entire neighborhood with a glacier, and that totally freaked me out, of course, as a first grader. My mom said, oh, don't worry, this summer we're moving to Phoenix, not a problem. So I didn't have to worry about that anymore. And then after that, we had acid rain for a while, a brief appearance by killer bees. If you were living in Phoenix at the time, they were going to get us all. Then we had the ozone hole was going to kill us all. Then it was global warming. Then it was global change because they weren't exactly sure because it kept cooling down. You even had some people call it global weirding. So these panics have been going on forever. And somebody turned back the clock a little and looked at The Guardian. The Guardian is a very important paper in the UK, very left-leaning as well. And someone found some predictions for the year 2020 in there. They were written in 1999. They wanted to talk about the climate, and they wanted to predict what the world would be like in 2020, basically 2 days from right now. So here's what The Guardian said about 20 years back. Climate change over the next 20 years could result, that's a good clever word there, in a global catastrophe costing millions of lives in wars and natural disasters. So basically the same stuff we're hearing today. And the most impressive quote that they had, major European cities by 2020 will be sunk beneath rising seas as Britain is plunged into a Siberian climate by 2020. So cancel all your plans to London because apparently in 2 days it's just going to be an ice-covered hellscape. So any plans you have to go there, you might want to cancel that. They also predicted for 2020 nuclear conflict, mega droughts, famine, and widespread rioting across the world, not just England, that one. So once again, this is 20 years ago. We had these same doom and gloom predictions. They're always 10 years out, 20 years out, 30 years out. And when you go back and try to talk to these people, they have no comment. I saw a few people on the Twitter machine replying to the author who is still writing for The Guardian, and he didn't have a whole lot to say. I guess you can make mistakes in this kind of hysterical climate fraud that people are pushing. And it's one of those things you can believe in climate change because the climate has been changing since there's been a climate, pretty much. Look throughout history. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to ancient history. And you look at the fall of the Roman Empire, and it was very unseasonably cool for about a three-year period. Crop yields collapsed. You had North Africa, which worked as kind of a breadbasket for them. That got the desert kind of took over that area. At the same time, all these other things going on, corruption in their government, barbarians. And then you had the Little Ice Age, probably about 1,000 years after that. So once again, the climate is changing. We know it. And heck, there could be some human impact on it. But when you get to this apocalyptic view that we're all going to die unless we completely, it's always reject capitalism. These people don't seem to notice that one of the issues with the old Soviet Union was environmental degradation. Communists are not very good about taking care of the planet because all they care about is lining their pockets. You might want to refer to HBO's Chernobyl film for a little more details on that, the devastation they wrought on their own environment. But these people still are pushing this. Capitalism is evil. We're all going to die unless we get rid of capitalism. These doom and gloom prophets have been around forever. You had people in the 70s also saying, you know, starvation is going to increase. You had Malthus many, many years ago saying we were all going to be overpopulated. And now the world has more people than even he predicted. And it's more successful than it's ever been. A lot of reason for that is free markets have spread worldwide, not just in America, not just in the West, but making huge inroads into Africa, throughout Asia. Vietnam is turning, gosh, in some ways even more capitalist than we are, despite us not sticking it out in the Vietnam War. They just said, wow, this communism, it does not work. We need to open up to tourism, open up to trade. And you compare them to a monstrous totalitarian state like North Korea, and you can see the radical difference. If you close yourself off, if you try to control all the decisions that your people make, it's not going to be a good thing. Good things are not going to happen when you do that. So it's just very enlightening to look back at these old doom and gloom prophecies and understanding. I feel like when I write articles for AZ Central, the Arizona Republic especially, I know I'm talking to an audience that might be center-left. It's not Ricochet is a conservative site, and I feel like all my articles are another way of saying, would everybody calm down? Calm down about the climate. Calm down about Trump's tweets. Calm down about all these things. And frankly, if the left ever wants to win again, they are not going to do it through hysteria because no one believes them anymore. And they just keep screaming louder and louder and louder, thinking that we're wrong and we're going to change our mind. No, instead, we realize that most of these people, this doomsaying has not come to fruition. It won't come to fruition. We've been hearing it in our entire lives. And even though they're doing their darndest to scare the heck out of our kids, I have two daughters in high school, and they're taught all the time about this monstrous climate change that's going to kill us all. And I just have to say, hey, it was supposed to kill me about 20 years ago, and I'm still waiting. So we will see what happens with that. But a great deal of skepticism is good. On the other hand, we need to bring back conservationism, which is one of the reasons I live in Phoenix and not in D.C. or New York or something like that. I love our mountains. I love nature. I love going out for long, long hikes when I don't see a car or a human being. So, yes, we should preserve and conserve our planet. We don't need to give into hysteria for this. Hey, we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we'll be back for a few minutes. Talk to you on the other side. Welcome back to 960 The Patriot. This is the Seth Liebson Show. I am filling in for Seth. I'm John Gabriel of the Arizona Republic and Ricochet.com. Please give both a visit. Another item I saw on the news today, as I mentioned earlier, it's kind of a slower news time you always have. Once Christmas ramps up until the end of New Year's Eve and everybody gets over their hangovers. But the other one was Biden in a... he was doing an event in a place called Washington, Iowa. That's the state of Iowa. The town's called Washington. And he was asked who he would nominate to the Supreme Court and would he consider nominating President Obama. And, of course, Biden, he loves to tie himself to Obama now. It's about the only advantage I think he has. He says, well, if Obama would take it, yes, I would nominate him to the Supreme Court. I remember any time a Republican wants to put someone in that position, nominate someone who has not been a judge before, the left always is up in arms and they're not qualified. They're not qualified. Although many people on the Supreme Court of the U.S. have not been judges, but that's no matter. They say that disqualifies them. Obama's never been a judge either. And also, he's going to be pushing 60 by the time a new vacancy opens up if we're dealing with President Joe, which would be a very interesting 4 years, to say the least. Democrats have done this for a long time. We saw Hillary was asked this in 2016, but she was more noncommittal because I think she was still bitter that Obama whooped her in the primaries in 2008. Her reply was, wow, what a great idea. No one has ever suggested that to me. Wow. I tried to do that as flat as possible to emulate Hillary's voice a little bit. But yeah, I think Democrats want to hear he would be great on the Supreme Court. I don't know why Obama would even consider that. He is making really big money right now. He just built this vast mansion in Martha's Vineyard, right next to the water, which is, you know, of course it'll be flooded by climate change if you believe what he promotes and what Greta promotes. But yeah, he built it right on the waterfront. So I guess he's not as worried after all when it comes to his own money and property. But he's making really good money. He just came out with a playlist, his favorite songs of the year. And I might add, they're all pretty terrible, but I have weird tastes in music. So maybe that's the reason I don't care for it. But Obama, enjoy retirement. Joe, you're not going to get Obama through. I can't imagine by the time it was over, a lot of Democrats might turn away. The rest of the Democratic field is just kind of pushing the memory of Obama away as they say how terrible our health care is and basically give him no credit for anything, which I guess is deserved. But interesting to think about. Don't think we'll have a Supreme Court Justice Obama anytime soon or even far down the line. Hey, we're going to be back with Cam Edwards with BearingArms.com. He is highly, highly educated in all things Second Amendment. And we just wanted to talk about some of the shootings and why we should all be protecting ourselves. Be back after the news break.